The conversation of your life, local, relevant, digital, and always on.
America will hear my two cents.
Elected to serve iHub radio listeners across the desert cities. He calls it as he sees it.
Quick question.
Now, here's Russ Betts.
Someone answer him now!
All right. Well, I don't know how I'm going to do this show with a mask on, but we're going to try. If it sounds a little muffled, well, just imagine we're sitting here in the studios at iHub Radio in beautiful downtown Palm Springs, doing our part to be protected from the coronavirus. We're going to talk a lot about that today. We do have a stack of other items, but just about every government meeting is, they're not all canceled, but most are. Everything's pretty much shutting down in the government circles, essential activities continuing, but wow, a lot of government meetings are canceled, along with all the other events we've seen. I want to start out here by getting into some of the contrast. And we've all seen contrasting irony that pops up on Facebook at times. One person will ask a question, and then you scroll down to the very next post, and there's the answer. For example, does anyone have a car for sale that's under $3,000? Then you scroll right down to the next post and says, hey, I've got a car for sale. It runs good. I'm just asking $3,000. And so it was this morning when I opened up Facebook. It was not cars that were being discussed. It was the coronavirus. What else? Everybody's talking about that. And one person posted what they were thinking as they closed the door on the bar where they worked. They noted it felt weird closing the door and not knowing when it will open again. And then came the very, very next post. It's from a dear friend of mine who lives in the Chinese city of Wuxi. It's a city where I used to live. And he was posting how nice it was to be opening the door on the bar where he and his friends like to meet and enjoy life together. And, I kid you not, that's exactly what confronted me on that post. And it was so contrasting and it was so telling. You know, the post by my friend in China was the very, very next post by the person who was wondering what they were going to do now that they're closing the bar and not knowing when it would open. Well, it's a finite number. When it reopens is a finite number. We just don't know yet. My friend in China, who did not know how many nights it would be before he could get back to the Red Lion pub, but he knows now. And the two posts provide both the question and the answer. The answer is right in front of us. The answer is what other people have been through, what other countries have been through. We are heading into what my friend in China has just been through, well, what everybody in China has just been through. And it was not all that long ago that I was talking to Malu and sharing with you his accounts of what he was going through, and with some sympathy and a little bit of horror at what he was telling me. In one post, he told what it was like not to go out of his house for 15 days. He celebrated when shopping day came around, the one day of the week when his block was allowed to go out and replenish the supplies in the house. In China, before the crisis, the streets were incredibly busy with all manners of cars and kids walking to school and people walking about. If you ever seen pictures of China, I mean, go on YouTube and look, busy China intersection. It's teeming with people. Looks like downtown New York City everywhere. Well, the coronavirus hit, and Malu was then posting pictures out of his window of the streets below that were absolutely barren, save for a lone policeman or maybe somebody going to their job in some essential position at a hospital. Well, we're going to see that. We're going to see those quiet streets. Or at least we should. I mean, that's the course we need to follow. Now, if you look around downtown Palm Springs at night, you're seeing the comments on social media that it looks like a ghost town. It's, you know, it's what we've come to expect in Palm Springs. And if you go drive the LA freeways right now, there's not much red that pops up on your GPS phone when you're trying to figure out where you're going. It's the freeways are about like they were back in the 60s, smooth sailing when rush hour meant it was just 1 hour of the day that there was a rush hour. Except now there's no rush hour. It's quiet. So, just like it happened in China, The door will be unlocked to welcome patrons again at that pub, or the person who's posting was wondering what would happen. And someone's going to post, as Malou did this morning, that the streets are going to get busy again and life is going to come back to Wuxi. Life came back to Wuxi. Life's going to come back everywhere. Now, there is a difference, of course, in this comparison. And, I'm not certain that we're taking the same steps that China did. We're freedom-loving Americans, and that contrast is a little bit harder to comprehend or to take into account. China, when the government says, hi, everybody stay in your apartments, don't go out, well, they pretty much say, okay, we're going to stay in our apartments and not go out. In America, somebody tells us we're not going to go out, the first thought that crosses our mind is, yeah, well, who are you? Maybe I'm going to go take a walk out front. If you took a walk out front in China and you didn't have your mask on, or you took a walk out front, there's somebody, a policeman out there blowing his whistle telling you to get back in. And if you refused to get back in, there's a whole bunch of people came and grabbed you and sent you back in. You can see those videos online, too. Stay at home we must. The only way to slow and eventually stop the virus is for us not to spread it among ourselves. That's how we get the doors back open on the pubs and our movie theaters and our restaurants and everywhere else that we want to be open and busy. That's how we return back to normal life. We employ the same measures that successfully stopped the spread of the virus in other places. Now, if we do that, things will return to normal. And we have a storm that's brewing. This is an analogy I've been using. And we can hear the thunder on the horizon. Those of you who live in the Midwest, maybe this analogy works better than those of you in California. Here, when there's a storm, it's an earthquake. And it's like it happens. All of a sudden it happens. You don't get any warning. So just follow me on this analogy. We've got a storm that's brewing. And we can hear the thunder clapping off in the horizon and maybe see that dark cloud rolling in. And we know it's going to blow through and it's going to get a bit intense for a while. But as storms do, it will pass. We will walk outside and everything will be soaked. Maybe the water will still be dripping off the trees, but the sun will be out. And you look up and you're going to say, wow, am I glad that's over. But for now, take the steps that you're being told to take. Stay at home. If it's not essential that you go to the store, don't go there. And there's a few other tips I got to pass along. If you're going out to go to the store, does the entire family need to go? Do you and your spouse need to go? Have the rest of them, if they must go in the car, at least wait outside. One person should be going into the store. I'm getting off into other parts of this here that I don't want to go to yet, but we might as well get into this. You are just not paying attention to what people are asking you to do. You need to stay home. How important is it that you really go down to get something at the store? I mean, I'm imagining people sitting home saying, well, this is a good time to, finish that project car I've been working on. I'm going to go out there and work on my old Mustang that's been sitting here for a while. I haven't got anything. That's a good time. I'm home. I'm going to do that. They say, there's a part I need. So, heck, the auto parts store is open. I'm going to run down to the auto parts store and get a part. Anyhow, so, this is not the way it's supposed to work. You're supposed to just stay at home, okay? Malou stayed home for 15 days, didn't go out of his apartment. Same thing with my wife's sister and our in-laws that live in China still. You got to stay home. No contact. You've got to follow the steps. We heard the story about the hand washing, wipe down every surface that's out there and, do all that. There's some debate on whether or not you should be wearing a mask, but you should be covering your mouth and nose to protect everybody else. They say, the mask doesn't prevent you from getting it. Well, maybe it doesn't, but it prevents you from spreading it if you got it. And the way this thing is working, we don't know who has it and who doesn't. Anyhow, so the scary part is, the storm is brewing, and we're sitting here right now wondering what's ahead in the next 10 days or maybe the next 20 days. Is it going to be really terrible, like they're experiencing in Italy? Or is it going to be, not so much, and, we made it through it. The little bit of precautions that we took helped, and, okay, it didn't hit the United States as hard as other places. Now I'm looking at a news website here that's been tracking the coronavirus from way long time ago. Since when have they been tracking this? It says here, since March 1st, 2020, they started tracking this. And when they first started tracking this, the United States was just a little blip with one, you know, few cases, not a big deal. Now, China, that went through it the hardest, and it's now apparently through it, it's according to all counts that we're getting. I got a letter from another email from Malou. He gave me an update, and I'm going to share that with you a little later in the show. But China had 81,000 cases and 3,261 deaths. And then there comes Italy, with a population of about 60 million instead of 2 billion, as China has. And they have 53,500 cases and already 4,800 deaths. China had 3,200 deaths. Big deal there. Wuhan was just a nightmare. I mean, that's a lot of people dying in a short period of time. Italy, with only 60 million people, surpassed that. If my math is right, 8% of those of the it's just an incredible number. 4,825 people as of today have died in Italy. Now, and they have 53,000 cases. Now, the United States is third on this list. It used to be way, way down the list. The way this list works is whoever has the most cases moves on up the list. And the U.S. has 27,000 cases. Spain has 26. Iran has 20. Remember when we were hearing Iran was so horrible? Well, we've now surpassed Iran in the number of cases, and it's going to go up because we're reporting more. But the number of deaths in the U.S. is now at 992. In Spain, it's 3,100. Germany, it's 1,600. Anyhow, this thing is a storm that's a brewing. And now you got to ask yourself, well, what's coming ahead? The next 10 days are going to tell us what's going on with this one. Everything's changing so fast. I remember what it was 2 weeks ago. I was at the Coachella Valley Association of Governments, and I got a briefing by Chad Bianco, the Riverside County Sheriff, letting us know what they were working on and things that they were doing around the valley. And of course, coronavirus was on people's minds back then. And the tennis garden had just canceled its event. And, you know, we remember talking to people saying, wow, I just lost my job at tennis garden. So they said, well, we've backed off. We had our plans in place to do our, you know, policing duties there at the tennis garden to make sure everything's okay. Well, we've withdrawn from that. And, you know, now we're looking, back then they were looking to Stagecoach and Coachella Fest. Of course, those get canceled. And then everything else gets canceled. And all the casinos are closed. In just the span of 2 weeks, all of Las Vegas, the Strip. If you go to Las Vegas, I mean, guess the lights are out on Las Vegas. Maybe they're leaving them on. I don't know. I haven't looked. But, things are just changing really, really rapidly. What's ahead in the next 10 days? We don't know. We got some people telling us. We got people, all kinds of people predicting it. You got a Harvard law professor who says we're overplaying this. And the question is it being overplayed? Did we essentially wreck our economy on something that's not that bad? Or is this thing going to be as bad as Italy? And I'm going to share some of that with you. There's details out of Italy when you see these emergency room doctors and the pleas they're making to everybody. You know, they're saying lock down. Don't go. Don't bring upon yourself what we went through. All right, lots more ahead here on the Russ Bet Show. I promise you, we do have some other news, but we're going to continue with coronavirus when we return. Russ Betts, Palm Springs, beautiful downtown Palm Springs, back with more.
The conversation of your life. Local, relevant, digital, and always on.
America will hear my two cents.
Elected to serve iHub radio listeners across the desert cities. He calls it as he sees it.
Quick question.
Now, here's Russ Betts.
Someone answer him now!
All right, before we went to break, we were talking about what's ahead in the next 10 days. It's either a really bad thing coming, or we've overreacted and totally devastated our economy, and only the future will tell. What's for certain is this thing has been unfolding really, really fast. Something that, 2 weeks ago at a briefing that I was at CVAG, Coachella Valley Association of Governments Public Safety Committee, getting a briefing from Riverside County Sheriff Chad Bianco, was wondering if Coachella Fest and Stagecoach would be canceled. And, well, we all know what the answer to that one is. They're canceled long ago. Seems like ages ago that was news. And then, you know, what's come next? I mean, it's anything you hear. Well, I was in on a conference call in which the governor's office was talking about what they were going to do and things going on then. And I'm going to cover that a little bit. That was quite the fiasco. It did not go as the governor had planned, but we'll cover that just a little bit later in the show. The point is, everything is changing so fast. And I'm looking at something I had copied from, a couple weeks ago in a prep from the show. And so this is a week ago. This tells you what's going on here. And it says, I'm writing to you from Bergamo, Italy, at the heart of the coronavirus crisis. The news media in the U.S. has not captured the severity of what is happening here. And I'm writing this post because each of you today, not the government, not the school district, not the mayor, each individual citizen has a chance today to take the actions that will deter the Italian situation from becoming your own country's reality. The only way to limit this virus is to stop your contact with other people. And the only way to do that is just change your behavior today. Now, she writes, she says, if you're in Europe or the U.S., you are weeks away from where we are today in Italy. And she says, I can hear you now. It's just the flu. It only affects old people with preconditions. She says, there are two reasons why coronavirus has brought Italy to its knees. First, it is a flu is devastating when people really get sick and they need to end up in ICU. I don't need to read any more of this, but she goes on to explain what's hit them and how it's so overwhelmed the hospital system. And that's the concern here, is what happened, you know. So our hospitals now, if you get this and have a problem, you can pretty much show up at the hospital today and feel reasonably certain that you're going to get the care you need. And believe me, I'm not trying to be alarmist. I don't know. I'm watching this drama unfold just like all of you are, but I'm presenting both sides of it here, and you can decide. I think increasingly people are recognizing it's pretty serious. I mean, when you got Disneyland closing, the NBA canceling its season, National Basketball Association canceling its season, all this other stuff going on. If it's being overplayed, it's a lot of people making some very tough decisions and siding with, no, this is serious. And so if you want to go to the hospital today, I think it's probably a reasonably good chance. I know some people that actually did make that drive there. One ended up having a strep throat. I was a bit concerned. Of course, anybody who's got a sniffle or anything else is concerned. And, colds do come and go. They, you know, it doesn't always happen to be the coronavirus. But when you show up at the hospital, you can get there, see somebody, they'll take care of you, and all's good. But what happens in Italy or even Wuhan, China, when you show up at the hospital and they say, I'm sorry, we are just full. We can't take another patient. And somebody says, but my husband's really sick. He needs to see somebody. And I said, well, you know, he can wait here in line or maybe go try another hospital. And in China, you know, they have lots of hospitals, lots of people. And one woman, their account was, you know, going to five different hospitals and couldn't get any help. And so, you know, what happens when the system's overwhelmed? And that's what I think is the big, big concern here. What happens when there is not enough capacity at the hospital, not enough doctors to handle this spike? It's a spike. It happens all at once. You know, the flu comes along and, you know, everybody gets sick every year and the hospitals take it in and some people, die from the flu. And it's a very serious and terrible thing when that happens, but it doesn't overwhelm the hospital. They can deal with it. They're used to it. Same thing in the prison system. They have systems, and Chad Bianco explained that to us. He says, you know, we have systems in place in the jail. He says, when, you know, flu or something goes through the jail, everybody gets it. It's such close confined quarters and there's so many people there and it just spreads through there. Well, what happens when this one spreads through? And I heard some reports that a couple jails somewhere have already seen some cases of it. And this is pretty insidious. I mean, this one, you know, it's like pneumonia, really bad pneumonia. And anyhow, you've all heard all those details. So What happens when the hospital systems are overwhelmed? That's the concern here. And they won't be overwhelmed, though, if you just don't go outside. I don't want to say that too many times, but anyhow. So here's your, this person here is writing from Lombardy, Italy, or Bergamo, Italy, saying, hey, you really, really, really need to not have contact with other people. And now, the other side of this is a standard Stanford professor that says data indicates we're severely overreacting to coronavirus. He doesn't believe this person from Bergamo, Italy. His analysis that he published in the Stanford paper says otherwise. We'll see what he says on the other side of this break. This is Russ Betts at iHub Radio in beautiful downtown Palm Springs.
Read about it tomorrow. See you tonight. Hear it all day today. If it's happening in the Coachella Valley, it's front and center now on iHub Radio.
And there it is.
Now, here's Russ Betts.
All right, I'm going to get into some of this from the Stanford professor who says we're severely overreacting to the coronavirus. Then we're going to get on to something a little more local. I don't want to scare you to death, and I also don't want to leave you with this impression too much, but in an analysis published Tuesday, Stanford's John Iondis, who is the co-director of the university's Meta Research Innovation Center and professor of medicine, biomedical data science, statistics, and epidemiology, and population health, if that's true, he's got the credentials. He suggests that the response to coronavirus pandemic may be a fiasco in the making because we're making seismic decisions based on utterly unreliable data. The data we do have, he explains, indicates that we are likely severely overreacting. I don't know. Anyhow, he says the current coronavirus disease, COVID-19, has been called a once-in-a-century pandemic. But it may also be a once-in-a-century fiasco. He says draconian countermeasures have been adopted in many countries. And anyhow, he says he's basically saying we've got woefully inadequate data. Well, I think everybody knows that we have woefully inadequate data, and I'm certainly not going to argue with a guy with these credentials. I'm just here to bring this to you so that you can weigh yourself what's going on with this guy. He's certainly got biomedical data science, epidemiology and population health, professor of medicine. That's pretty impressive. That's the big question, and what I said earlier in the show is the next 10 days will tell. All right, anyhow, let's just take a look at the here and now. Let's go up to Big Bear City, California, and news that Rick Herrick is the first positive case of COVID-19 in Big Bear. And what's significant is that Rick Herrick is the mayor of Big Bear Lake. Now, it's obviously significant if anybody gets it, but, it's a little bit more, he's somebody of prominence, and he was tested on Thursday, March 19th, and the test came back positive late Friday. So he goes out and he gives the announcement. He's going to tell everybody that they have the first case of coronavirus in Big Bear City, in Big Bear. And he says, the time has come to announce that we have the first confirmed case of COVID-19 in the Big Bear Valley. I was tested after a week of self-quarantine following what I felt was like a bout with the flu. And the results concluded that I have contracted the coronavirus. The first confirmed case in Big Bear. This is not the announcement that I imagined, he said, but I hope that by going public on what normally would be a private medical matter can be a learning moment for our tight-knit community. A week ago when the first twinge of illness struck me, I followed orders to stay at home. That wasn't fun, it wasn't easy, and he knew he was fighting off something. He knew he had a cold. So he worked from home and kept his distance from his wife and frequently washed his hands and did all the steps you're supposed to do. So the message, he said, this is his message. The message I need to convey is to heed the warnings from the World Health Organization as well as from our local public health officials. And then he goes on to talk about what the city's steps he's taken to combat this. If you feel the slightest onset of illness, stay at home and call your doctor's office. Don't go to the local emergency room without calling ahead so they can evaluate your symptoms over the phone. All right. So there you go. So strikes home. Strikes close to home. And, you know, in the next 10 days, that's what's going to happen if it does happen. You know, when you know somebody who's got it and is severely ill, and God forbid we find out somebody who's, anyhow, so, you know, cities are all taking their steps to correct this and solve for this. And, you know, you heard Palm Springs earlier in the week, talking about their shelter in place. You know, and then now the governor is, what's he got it, stay at home. I don't know what he calls it, the stay at home order. So, you know, I'm looking around, and I, as a council member, this is a little difficult time because you're getting lots and lots of questions. There's people out there who think, well, I thought they said this was a big deal and we're all supposed to stay at home. Didn't the governor just order that? And they look around and they see the auto parts store is busy, this grocery store is teeming with people. I mean, you drive down the boulevard and, I mean, there's people even out there selling the phones that they give away under the government program to get people phones that have their little tents set up on the side of the roads. They're out there selling phones, having contact with everybody, you know, signing them up. It's like business as usual, it seems. And so you get a call as a council member says, what the heck's going on with this? Why is all this activity going on? You know, the people giving away free cell phones, are they allowed to do that? So you check the list and you find out the essential, it's called essential businesses, and telecommunications is considered an essential business. And so you got the governor came out with this big order with all this fanfare. And there, yes, everybody is supposed to stay home except for this. And I'm going to give you the reasons. The following except essential activities will remain open. And that's the key word, essential. City and county government services. So, yes, you can still go to the city hall and get what you need. Police stations, fire stations, well, we expect those to stay open. Jails will stay open. Courts, now they've closed some of the courts down. Garbage and sanitation will continue to get picked up. I don't think we have much contact with the garbage and sanitation. Public transportation is staying open. Water, power, and gas utilities, although some of those are closing their offices. You can't go in and pay the bill in person. Now you just put it through the mail slot. Public works and construction, including construction of housing, is considered essential. Airports and ports are staying open. Gas stations are staying open. Auto supply, auto repair, bicycle repair shops, and related facilities are to remain open as essential. Healthcare providers are to remain open. Hospitals, of course, clinics, dentists, pharmacies, pharmaceutical and biotechnical companies, medical and scientific research laboratories, healthcare supplies, home health care service providers, veterinary care providers, mental health providers, physical therapists, and chiropractors are remaining open as essential. Cannabis dispensaries are essential. Manufacturers and suppliers are essential. Healthcare operations that don't include a fitness center and exercise gym, they're essential. Food providers, including grocery stores, water retailers, certified farmers markets. You can go to a farmer's market. Hey, who knew? Farm and produce stands, supermarkets, convenience stores. You getting the point here? There's a whole lot of stuff that's an essential business that, okay, you got to stay at home. Do not leave your house. Stay at home. Only go out for essential business. And then here's the essential business. Do I need to keep reading? Convenience stores, the 7-Eleven. Hey, no problem. Go down to the 7-Eleven. Warehouse stores, so you can go there. Convenience supermarkets, food banks. You can go to a food bank. You can go to a restaurant, but only take out and drive through. You can't sit down in the restaurant and eat. Food cultivation, including farming, livestock, and fishing, is okay. That's essential. Hardware stores and nurseries, those are still essential. So your local hardware store is still open. You can go there. Plumbers, electricians, exterminators, janitorial workers, handyman, funeral home workers, morticians, moving services, AC installers, carpenters, landscapers, gardeners, property managers, private security personnel, and other service providers are all okay to stay open. Banks, credit unions, financial institutions are essential businesses. Organizations and businesses that provide food, shelter, and social services. It's a long list. Laundromats. The laundromats are open. Newspapers, magazines, televisions. Yours truly, the radio, is an essential business. Educational institutions, including schools. Of course, those are all closed. They made the right decision there. And all they're suggesting is that when you go out to all those places, stay 6 feet from the person that's around you. So if you're calling your local council member and saying, well, why is so many people out and about when the governor put out this order? I mean, he sounded pretty serious about it. I mean, this was a big deal. California governor locks down state of California, issues stay-at-home order, except that really, really, really long list that I just read for you. Now, in Italy, they're taking other measures, and they made the same measures in China. Everything on that list is like, forget it. The grocery store was open. Maybe the bank was open in China. I don't know. But they pretty much locked it down to gasoline stations, public transportation, and grocery stores. That's it in China. That's it. Those three things, everything else locked down, and Italy's doing the same thing. Don't go to work. Sorry, if you got bugs in your house, you're not going to have the exterminator come into your house. If you need an auto part to work on your Mustang in your garage because you got nothing else to do and you're bored, sorry. But that's not what the governor ordered. And, you know, earlier in the week, Palm Springs City Council came out with what they call shelter in place. Now, as I remember shelter in place, I used to live in what was considered the Midwest. It's actually the border with Ohio and Pennsylvania, but we still kind of thought of it as Midwest. We got tornadoes every now and then. And what went on there was you're driving home because you know there's this fierce thunderstorm. And they said, hey, guys, look, we're closing down work. Everybody go home. There's a storm coming, and just we need you to be home with your family, so everybody drive home. So you're driving home, and you're listening to the radio, and it says, hey, guys, there's a tornado now on the ground. It's serious. You may have been trying to get from work to home to get to, you know, shelter there, but right now we're telling you, forget it. Shelter in place. Pull over wherever you can. This is dire. Pull over. Find an underpass, find a wherever, go into a shopping mall, anything you can find, shelter now, shelter in place. So that's the order that Palm Springs came out with. And so, of course, everybody says, wow, that sounds pretty darn serious. And then Palm Springs, so then people start calling up other city councils and saying, well, how come the rest of the Coachella Valley isn't doing the same thing that Palm Springs did? And why isn't the other cities issuing these same orders? Well, the other cities were issuing the same orders. We just weren't calling it shelter in place. In Desert Hot Springs, a city where I'm a city council member, the exact same. We just called it, hey, keep your butt at home. That's what we called it in Desert Hot Springs. Keep your butt at home. Okay, don't go out. Don't go out unless it's essential. And by the way, if you do go out, it's okay to go out for all this big long list that I just read you. Palm Springs had the same exact list. Okay, so shelter in place, except if you need to go to wherever, go ahead. You can take your dog to the vet, no problem. So it was a little bit of consternation with other cities. In fact, they had the CVAG Executive Committee, Coachella Valley Association of Governments Executive Committee, met, and it got a little testy with Palm Springs insisting that everybody should be doing as much as they are. And the only thing Palm Springs had done at that point was to shut down the few businesses that aren't allowed, bars and restaurants. And in Palm Springs, that's a big deal. But every other city was saying, you know, we've basically done the same thing you have. We're just hadn't made the same amount of commotion. Maybe we should flail our arms and get all excited. I know I'm getting Palm Springs city council members mad at me right now. Sorry, I'm just telling you, you know, what we went through in other cities when we were doing exactly the same thing you were. But we just weren't calling it shelter in place. And I swear, people would say, well, I would ask them, well, what is shelter in place? What does it mean? And they go, well, I don't know. It sounds pretty serious. Well, yeah, it did sound serious. So you read all the exceptions. We aren't there yet. We have not gone into lockdown. Lockdown. Another word for it would be curfew. Have we imposed any curfew? Nobody can leave their house for any reason after 10. Well, except for medical. All right, we got lots more to go. We're going to divert here a little bit into some other news. There's some people in Congress who ended up getting a briefing on all this way ahead of the rest of us. And you know, they said, hey, you know what? I got a lot of stock in this portfolio, and well, maybe I should get rid of some of that. We're going to see just exactly who they are and what they did when we get back. This is Russ Betts on iHub Radio in beautiful downtown Palm Springs.
Live from the Palm Springs iHub. He calls it as he sees it. The Russ Betts Show. Call 760-544-TALK. Now, here's Russ Betts.
All right, I'm going to try and get through this before the top of the hour break when we get you news from the Desert Sun and who is coming up at the top of the break. It looks like NBC is going to give us some updates on news around the world. That's at the top of the hour. And also a little programming note coming up at in the start of the next hour, we're going to hear from Bill Effinger, who has a book out now. It's called How to Kill a Mocking Turd. A little bit of an odd title, I guess I would say, but the answer is you allow him to do it to himself. In other words, I guess the point of the title is, we'll let Bill Effinger explain that when he comes on. We're going to have a conversation with him at the top of the hour, and he's going to let us know about his book, and well, join us for some commentary on the president and some other deals. But right now we're talking about four senators who, the date was February 13th, and it was a relatively quiet day. Everything seemed to be going along, and then the Dow dropped 100 points. And just before the day, it had reached an all-time high. Things were looking good. Nobody suspected anything was coming up, except that four senators and a Senate Intelligence Committee ended up getting a briefing, telling them what was coming ahead. And one of those was, who do we have here? We had Richard Burr, Senator Richard Burr, Senator Dianne Feinstein, Senator Kelly Loeffler, and Senator James Inhofe. And this is going to be one for future economics classes. I mean, this day that the market began to crash, none of us knew what was coming, had no idea. But the four senators did. They had a heads up. And all of them sold their stock. Not just a little bit, a lot. Richard Burr, who's a Republican, but we've got Democrat Dianne Feinstein in there also, so never fear, this is a bipartisan take advantage of your position to save yourself millions of dollars. Anyhow, Richard Burr had $1.7 million in stocks and 33 separate transactions on that day. It was a flurry of selling. And basically, he was selling everything for cash. He was just cashing out. I mean, he'd been on a roll for 2 years, making a lot of money. His net worth, $1.7 million. And he decided, you know what? Just out of the blue, and right after this briefing, he sold everything. And, he attended that committee, that briefing on January 24th, his closed-door briefing on the Chinese coronavirus, and he was delivered a message by Dr. Anthony Fauci, and he's the head of the CDC, and apparently what Burr heard there spooked him so much that, he decided to save his family from financial harm. Problem was, he hid what he knew about the coronavirus threat from everybody else. I mean, he didn't just hide it, he lied about it. He published an editorial on February 7th, and he wrote that the United States is better prepared than ever to face an emergency public health threats like the coronavirus. It's better prepared than ever. Well, he knew he was lying when he wrote that, but he went ahead and wrote it. And the reason we know he was lying when he wrote that is because on February 27th, he went before an audience at something called the Washington Burke. I don't know what that is, but he compared the coronavirus to Spanish flu. He's at this private meeting. Well, you know, as things go, people get out their phones, they're recording stuff, and he got recorded. And he compared what was going on with the coronavirus to Spanish flu, which was a pandemic that killed close to 100 million people. He says, I can tell you about this. It's much more aggressive and than anything we've seen in recent history, and it's probably more akin to the Spanish flu. So he had a critical information that might have helped people that he's sworn to help and to protect, but instead he kept that information himself. He changed it with a few people there, I guess. Maybe there's some friends there. He wanted to pass it along. And so he made out like a bandit. And then he got Dianne Feinstein, who did the same thing. She's a Democrat from California. She's on the Senate Intelligence Committee also. She got the same briefing. And she had a stock portfolio worth $6 million. And she ended up dodging the crash because she took the position that she was going to pull all her stock out of the thing. Now, Now, everybody's offering an explanation. I don't know what Burr's explanation is. I don't think he's got one. Loeffler is saying that she doesn't handle any of the stocks, that only her stock advisors does, and she puts it in a blind trust, and she was very careful. And so apparently her stock advisors just called it exactly right. There was no call from her. She didn't call up and say, hi, why don't you just go ahead and sell everything? No call was made like that, she says. It was all without her knowledge that she just escaped, you know, almost onto the day, losing millions of dollars. She had one point, I don't forget how much she had. She lost a lot. Anyhow, Dianne Feinstein had $6 million. And her excuse was that she doesn't do the trading. Her husband does it all. And I guess that she had this information and she went home or she left the meeting, and we're supposed to believe that she didn't call her husband and say, she just kept it to herself. Instead of saying, hi, honey, I know something that's going to cost us $3 million, but I'm not going to tell you. Okay, so you're walking around. You've just come out of this briefing. You go, my gosh, I got $6 million in the stock market. And I've got it in some pretty vulnerable industries that, well, for sure the stock market's going to take a hit on this. You know, probably be a really good idea if I got my money out of there. But, of course, you know, my husband handles this, and while I don't talk to him about it because I wouldn't want to influence anything there that would unduly enrich me if my husband were to, you know, if I were to tell him something. So supposedly what we're supposed to believe is that she decided that, I know something in my head that it's probably could cost us as much as $3 million, but I'm not going to tell my husband. I'm just absolutely not going to do it. You know, it just begs credibility to suspect that is what took place. So you got four senators dumped millions of stock after getting briefed on the threat of coronavirus. And, of course, we all know what's happened to the stock market. It's down, what was it? Before all this hit, it was at 29,000. I mean, things were booming. The unemployment rate was at 2%. That's a really sad part about all this. I don't know what's coming in the next 10 days. I don't know what we're going to face. I don't know what the hospitals are going to look like. I don't know if we're going to go overrun or we're going to dodge the bullet or if this is all whatever. But one thing's for certain, this tragedy of this economy going from booming to bust. And I know there's some people out there that every time I mention that, they say, well, it wasn't really booming. There were people that hadn't worked two or three jobs. Well, at least they had jobs. You know, they weren't closing the door on a bar where they worked, wondering when or if they were going to open again. We've got a wildly devastated economy. Everybody's out of work. I don't know if everybody's fully comprehended it yet, but they're sure out of work. You got these four senators who seem to have saved themselves millions of dollars by getting out of the stock market ahead of the rest of us. And, you know, I don't know. You can't say that they should have gone out and said, hi, everybody, get your money out of the stock market. But I don't know. It's just, you know, when they come up with excuses, they should just say, yes, I got this briefing. I knew exactly what was going to happen if I left my money in the stock market, so I took it out. I don't know if they can say that or not. They probably can't because it's illegal. But, I mean, you know, how much are we supposed to believe when people tell us this stuff? I mean, it just begs credibility. There's some really interesting polling numbers out. We're going to get to that later in the show. There's all kinds of tracking polls on what people think about, well, what else, the coronavirus. But when we get back, we're going to be talking to Bill Effinger from, author Bill Effinger, coming up.